From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. There was a time when American journalism was considered the envy of the world. With a constitutionally guaranteed freedom of the press, journalism flourished, and by and large, journalists showed a healthy skepticism of power, and elites showed the press a modicum of respect. Today, as the term fake news is both a real phenomenon and a weapon in the service of propagandists, it's harder for the public to tell what is truth and what is not. Journalism is essential to democracy. Can there be democracy without journalism? Joining me to help answer that question is Victor Picard, associate professor at the Annenberg School for Communication at University of Pennsylvania, where he co-directs the Media Inequality and Change Center. He's written widely about media, the news, communication, and democracy. And he now joins me to discuss his newest book, Democracy Without Journalism, Confronting the Misinformation Society. Welcome to the program, Victor.
Thanks for having me, Sonali.
So I understand that your approach to examining journalism and the media is looking at the economic model by which most commercial media is organized. And you say that you start from an assumption that commercial journalism has always been in crisis. Why?
Yes, excellent question. I think that, if you look at the history of the American press, you see that from the very beginning, from the dawn of commercialization in the late 1800s, you see these tensions where the commercial imperatives, the need to make money, have often overwhelmed the democratic imperatives, the need to inform the populace and to provide a forum for diverse views and voices. And at various points in our history, we've seen these crises flare up where the commercialism really drives our journalism into dangerous places. And I think we're going through one of these crises right now. And arguably, the crisis we're facing now is an existential one for the American press.
So the corporate model of journalism has sort of from the start been the American way, right? Where even though we've had and still have PBS and NPR, which are arguably government funded. I mean, the only tiny percentage of their funding comes from the government. We do have C-SPAN. In other countries, you have main media like the UK's BBC or Australia's ABC, Canada's CBC. In the US, has publicly funded media always taken a backseat to commercial media?
Yes. As you note, I think compared to other countries, there's a degree of American exceptionalism at work here where we pay so little per person per year for our public media. We're almost literally off the charts. We pay about $1.40, about the price of a cheap cup of coffee to support our public media. This has changed at various points throughout history, but certainly compared to media systems around the world, the American system has been hyper-commercialized. And I think this doesn't explain all of our problems, but it explains a lot of them. From shouting heads on television to clickbait online, there is this excessive commercialism that's driving a lot of the media content. And I think that's the part of our analysis, even among left-leaning media critics, we often don't look at the underlying structural reasons for why our media is so bad so often.
So you mentioned clickbait. So social media is a relatively new phenomenon. And social media is very much, and many of the sort of online world of information sources is very much premised on the idea of an advertising-based model as well. Almost sort of a traditional corporate media model on steroids, right? I believe it was YouTube that just released its ad revenue recently, showing that it makes billions and billions of dollars a year on those little ads that they play right before videos. So did social media sort of supercharge the decline of journalism and the over-commercialization?
Right. I think social media deserves a lot of blame for many of the problems that we're dealing with, but I certainly wouldn't say they're the cause of it. They've exacerbated the journalism crisis. One of the factors that you did mention, although we're talking a lot about advertising, right now in our conversation. But right now, Google and Facebook gobble up almost all the digital advertising revenue online. And what that means is that the news creators, the content producers, especially news organizations, are being deprived of much of their financial sustenance. But again, I wouldn't put it all the blame on the platform monopolies as much as they are culpable. I think the bigger problem is that when you move to the web, when advertisers and readers move to the web, digital advertising pays pennies to the dollar of traditional print advertising. And that's because, as you note, our media system in the States has been so overly dependent on advertising revenue. So when you move to the web, this business model is blown to bits, and it's never coming back. And that, again, is also the problem when we have such a weak public media system in the United States. We don't really have a safety net for when the market fails to support the journalism that democracy requires.
Now, traditional corporate media often make a lot about objectivity, claiming that they provide unbiased news, and you have the standard, well, let's balance our sources if we, you know, give some space for a quote from a Democrat, let's throw in a Republican to show that we appear balanced. What are the assumptions and biases that go hand in glove with the corporate model, but are rarely talked about?
Yeah, and again, oftentimes this gets narrated, American journalism gets narrated in a way where there was this cultural progression towards professionalized journalism. And that's certainly part of the story. But there, again, is this economic imperative that we rarely look at. And historically, this clinging to objectivity, sometimes called the objectivity norm in professional journalism, was a way to please advertisers more than audiences. It was a way to not alienate large swaths of an audience, but also to rely on official sources, which was always cheaper to do, safer to do. And this skewed content, it skewed much of our journalism in a way where it would protect the status quo instead of challenging it. And I think it is this commercialism that is driving that. And that commercialism is always about selling advertising. It's about delivering audiences, delivering us, delivering our eyes and ears to advertisers who are trying to capture our attention. And this is true for mainstream news media. It's true for Facebook and other social media. This is the driving force in so much of the American media system. And this is exactly what I argue needs to be changed.
Does this model then sort of predictably show skepticism and even open hostility to forces that threaten the economic system on which it's based? I'm thinking of the huge slew of articles and op-eds against Senator Bernie Sanders, against Elizabeth Warren, against Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, anybody who critiques the corporate model, who might call themselves a democratic socialist, not all of the aforementioned do, seem to receive pretty negative treatment from the media. Does that have anything to do with the fact that the rhetoric of these politicians undermines the business model of the newspapers in question?
Yes, I think it does. I mean, there's always a lot of nuance here, and it takes some time to unpack it. I would argue that it's first this kind of economic imperative that drives much of our media system. It's about making a profit. But there is an ideological consequence to that, an ideological orientation to especially our elite, our mainstream media. And it plays out in a way where any voice, any opinion that is outside this very narrow parameter gets treated with a lot of scrutiny, is often dismissed. And I do think you're seeing some of this around Bernie Sanders and the way the campaign is getting treated, the way our politics are being framed. But I would say even a greater consequence, which does play against people like Bernie Sanders, who wants to talk about policy, or even Elizabeth Warren, who's very much focused on policy. Much of our media system is about trivializing our politics, sensationalizing things, focusing on conflict, focusing on petty personal disputes, or even things like what are they wearing during the debates. This I think you can trace back to that commercial mission of our media, but certainly there is this ideological policing that happens, and we're seeing this. I think we'll see more and more of this, especially as Bernie Sanders continues to do well.
I just want to mention the recent Washington Post op-ed by Dana Milbank called "Is Bernie Sanders Really Happening?" focused entirely on this writer's observations of Sanders' body language during the Senate impeachment trial. Literally detail after detail about how he sat, how he sighed, how he coughed, how he ran his hands through his hair or didn't. It was pretty amazing to watch that. And of course, it was negative. So would you say then the current state of the media is an inevitable outcome of the commercial economic model? And if so, is our political landscape today the result of that? Because of course, when journalism erodes, democracy erodes.
Yes, I would say all these things are related. As scholars, we're always careful not to sound over-determined. You know, we don't want to be too reductive. But I tend to steer clear of that term inevitable. But I would say that in a commercial media system, it is highly likely. I mean, in a capitalist society, it's highly likely that our media and political systems would play out in this way. And that's why I argue that as much as possible, we need to be taking our news media out of the market. And that goes back to your earlier question about kind of the ideological paradigm that's driving a lot of our media. In many cases, it's the market itself that's doing the ideological work of the Trump administration. I mean, it's hollowing out newsrooms, it's driving journalism into the ground. And so that's why I argue that we need to take journalism out of that commercial model. We need to decommercialize it. We need to create a public model. And that, I think, is our best case solution. And this applies to our political system as well. We need to get money out of politics as much as possible.
And of course, everything you're saying would be denounced by the naysayers as socialism, socialist, anti-capitalist, anti-American, un-American, and therefore dismissed outright.
Right. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't argue for it anyway. And, you know, if you look around the world and if you look in our own history, these kinds of arguments, whether it's democratic socialism or social democracy, these things are as American as apple pie. I mean, we've always recognized market failure. We've always subsidized our core systems. If you go back to the postal system, that was highly socialistic. So just because these words have become stigmatized and there's been these ideological battles to try to delegitimate them, I think Bernie Sanders is sort of exhibit A for how people aren't scared of socialism as much anymore. They're not as enthralled to market fundamentalism, especially among young people. And I think that's a very good thing.
So what would a truly public media system look like? And even actually before we get to that question, there were a lot of expectations and predictions that the traditional newspaper industry would die out. And indeed, newsrooms across the country did close down. But then you had the sort of cream of the crop, like the New York Times and the Washington Post and et cetera, survive. And what they've done is they've turned to this online subscription model. They've put up paywalls. After the first 5 articles a month, you know, subscribe in a way that's not terribly unaffordable. And so it seems as though they're surviving and pretty well right now with pretty high numbers of subscriptions. That's one way to do it. And it's how Pacifica has tried to do it, although we can't put a paywall up on the airwaves. But then there's just having actual government support through taxpayer funded subsidies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all of these models that you mentioned have been tried, are being implemented in different places in different ways. For the most part, the paywalls that you mentioned, the subscription model, is only working for the big papers like New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Washington Post. Most smaller papers are not able to sustain themselves. And we're talking about smaller papers, even large metro dailies. Haven't been able to sustain themselves just on subscriptions alone. So what this suggests is that the market really is not going to support the journalism we need. There really isn't a commercial option. That's why I keep coming back to the public media option. And whether we think about it in terms of direct subsidies, I like to think of it as just public investments. There are different ways we can do this. There are different sources from which we can draw the money. Even looking at infrastructure, like making sure people have access to broadband. These all should be part of the same conversation that we need to be providing people with the media they need.
So we have also the social media issue, right? Because presidents like Trump, well, there really only has been one president like Trump, but a figure like Trump can bypass traditional media outlets and essentially create his own echo chamber. He's helped along by Fox News, but he's most enabled, to me at least, it seems, by the likes of Twitter on social media outlets that refuse to apply the same standards of, you know, ethics and decency that you're supposed to display in your online interactions, to, you know, the same standards they apply to other people, don't get applied to Trump. And so there's still that problem of social media because more and more Americans are getting their information directly through articles and posts shared on social media, regardless of whether those articles or posts originate from traditional media outlets or from Breitbart, you know, or from a paid ad by Trump, which you might not even be able to tell is an ad.
Yeah, these are huge problems, and there aren't any easy answers, of course. But I think one of the things we need to look at is the role of our traditional media and how they often amplify. It's, as you suggest, it's absolutely true that kind of like how FDR and the fireside chats would circumvent the press by going straight to radio. You see Trump just using Twitter to not have to deal with media outlets as much. But the media outlets are amplifying that. If you're flipping through channels, more often than not, you'll see Trump's tweet somewhere up on the screen, sometimes not even being scrutinized by television commentators. So as much as he's using Twitter, it gets further amplified through the news. And yet also, as you mentioned, people are increasingly, not just young people, all people are increasingly getting their news and information through social media, through Facebook. And yet, if you trace back the origin of that, of much of that news and information, it's still coming from the very beleaguered newspaper industry, which has lost over 50% of its employees in just the last 20 years. So this supply side problem of actual news, not just so-called fake news, but actual news is disappearing. And that's something we need to talk about. That's a national crisis.
Right. I mean, it seems as though for a long time, the only ones who were worried about the crisis in journalism were journalists and people worried about, you know, just being able to get a job coming out of journalism school that actually allowed them to pursue their craft. But it really ought to be the purview of our society as a whole, right? Saving journalism or preserving journalism or even just redefining and reorganizing journalism so that it truly is something that fosters democracy.
Absolutely. I mean, you're absolutely right that it is a crisis, and yet this crisis is an opportunity to entirely reinvent, to reimagine what journalism could and should be. And that's how I'm trying to frame the problem. I mean, first we have to identify the structural nature of the problem, that journalism is being driven into the ground by the market, that we all have a stake in this. I have the title of my book, Democracy Without Journalism? It's both open-ended, but it suggests that we really, as you suggest, we cannot have democracy without journalism. So this is a national crisis that we all should be talking about. There should be some policy response to it. But this is never about just bolstering the corporate media outlets or even just trying to salvage the dying newspapers. This is about creating something entirely new, something that's actually publicly owned, not just public in name only, but actually publicly owned and governed, democratically decided. I think we can dare to imagine something like this emerging from the ashes.
And finally, there's also just the severe crisis of faith in journalism. Today, you have one half of society seeing journalism from the opposite end of the political spectrum as completely biased, and vice versa. Conservatives treat, you know, CNN and everything to the left of it as utterly biased, And of course, progressives consider CNN and everything to the right of it utterly biased. Restoring that faith is also going to take a lot of work, right? And journalists do bear some responsibility for that.
Absolutely. And again, I would argue that it's the commercialism that's driving news in particular ways that causes people to lose trust in it. But I do think, I mean, even among conservatives who hate the media, they typically like their local media. They like their local newspaper, their like local broadcaster. Even surveys show that conservatives are actually still happy with public media to some extent, at least to a surprising extent. So I think there are leverage points where if we imagine reinventing the system so that local communities are involved, they're engaged at every level of news production, I think that would over time regain the trust that has been squandered when people think of it as their media, not something that's being piped in from afar, from some absentee owner, from some big corporation, but it's actually their local media that they helped create and support. I think we could see something very different come out of this, and I'm weirdly hopeful that we can do this. Maybe not during the Trump administration, but perhaps the Bernie Sanders administration.
Do you feel that the advances in digital technology, although they've enabled social media and the consumption of social media to be expanded so dramatically that it's diluted trust, but it has also enabled independent journalists who have been shut out of or priced out of access to audiences flourish, right? I mean, there is a silver lining to the state of journalism today.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, digital technologies have helped amplify, reach new audiences, allow new voices to enter the discourse, and we never should be dismissive towards that, but at the same time, it's not generating the kind of financial support that journalists need.
I can certainly attest to the fact that if I was opening up video games or boxes of toys on YouTube, I'd probably be making more money than trying to survive on ad revenues through YouTube.
Yeah, I think so. That's something that we need to recognize, that there are these structural characteristics that elevate certain kinds of media over others. And, things that are very entertaining, like as you suggest, these fun YouTube programs, those are going to get more clicks, get more eyeballs, and they will be shared more through social media. But that's not what democracy requires, or democracy requires more than just that. And those are things that we need to pay for, and we shouldn't just let wither away just because they're not profitable for a handful of upper class white men. We need to find ways that it's produced regardless of whether the market will support it or not. We have to change the driving logic for our entire media system. And I think we can only do that if we pull it out of the market.
Victor, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Good luck with the book.
Thank you, Sonali. I really enjoyed talking to you.
My guest is Victor Picard, Associate Professor at the Annenberg School for Communication at University of Pennsylvania, where he co-directs the Media Inequality and Change Center. He's written a number of books about media, and we've been discussing his latest. It's called Democracy Without Journalism, Confronting the Misinformation Society. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes, and now Spotify.